Hello, this is Ann Studer with the Pantograph, dated Monday, September 9th, 2019. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headline, Combating Crime. Above it, there's a large picture of Bloomington officers investigating a double shooting August 13th at an apartment building on Springfield Road in Bloomington. Combating Crime, Getting Illegal Guns Off Streets, Working Together Areas of Focus, by Kevin Barlow. After the deadliest year in Bloomington Normal's recent history, Twin City Police are investigating fewer homicides than a year ago, but overall, violent crimes, particularly crimes involving guns, are running ahead of last year's pace. Violent crimes are one of the most important crime categories for the Bloomington Police Department, said Police Chief Don Donath. We have a very high rate of success in arresting the individuals responsible for violent crime. In Normal, police investigated 7 gunfire incidents during the first part of 2019, but town statistics reflect fewer overall serious crimes. Through the first 8 months of 2019, the Bloomington Department investigated at least 22 gunfire incidents, which resulted in 4 people injured and 1 death. 3 men were charged in connection with the April 2nd homicide of Juan Nash. In 2018, the Bloomington Department verified 19 gunfire incidents that included 4 incidents resulting in a total of 7 deaths. Arrests have now been made in all of those cases. 2 trends that are noticeable from our perspective involve the part that social media plays in shooting incidents and an increase of individuals engaging in activity not just in McLean County, but in other counties throughout central Illinois, said State's Attorney Don Knapp. It is all too easy for individuals with a quarrel to broadcast slights directed at others. This activity, coupled with the ease in which social media allows one to learn of someone else's location, is many times the impetus of many of our shots fired incidents. To slow the rate of violent crime, Knapp said, agencies and prosecutors have to work together, focusing on one person and one illegal gun at a time. Karen Irving, a founding member of the local chapter of McLean County Moms Demand Action, part of a national organization seeking solutions to end gun violence, is happy to see a reduction in gun-related deaths, but remains concerned with the number of gunfire incidents in the Twin Cities. When you listen to the mother talk about losing her son, it really is devastating, Irvin said. Gun violence has had such a huge impact on this community, whether someone is being killed, injured, or just scared when they hear gunfire. And we still have lost 1 life this year, and there still have been a number of people injured this year. We are lucky there hasn't been more. The difference between someone being injured or someone being killed is really just based on the trajectory of the bullet. It can be just a few inches one way or another. Andrew Held, interim executive director of Western Avenue Community Center in Bloomington, acknowledges there are still too many shootings. There is still a lot of work to be done, he said. We just had a teen shot a few weeks ago, and the bullet was very close to an artery, and so it could have gone very badly. One point of emphasis is to get as many illegal guns off the street as possible. Crime and Intelligence Analysis Unit Supervisor Jack McQueen said that from January to July 2018, Bloomington Police removed 12 handguns from the streets. In the first half of 2019, 21 handguns were removed. The rise in the removal rate is bittersweet. While encouraging, it's just another symptom of the growth of the gun culture among young males, the crime statistics report said. This year, there has been a defined increase in the possession of and subsequent use of firearms this year by local offenders, the report said. Our response to the increase has been increased patrols on hotspots, increased coordination and communication with state and federal prosecutors regarding habitually violent subjects, and the opening of new investigations focused specifically on illegal possession of handguns by local gang members. We invest a substantial amount of time and effort investigating these crimes for a couple of reasons, Donath said. First, a violent crime is very traumatic to the individuals who are the victims of the crime. But secondly, when other citizens hear of these crimes, it makes them fearful of crime in general. Before retiring in June, Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler released the 2018 Crime Statistics Report that indicated 147 fewer overall reported incidents, a drop of 9% from 2017. While the homicide investigations increased, robberies fell 18%, thefts dropped 12%, and criminal sexual assaults fell by 7%. In normal, index crimes, which include homicide, sexual assault, robbery, aggravated battery, aggravated assault, burglary, theft, motor vehicle theft, and human trafficking were down 7.6% from 2017 and 8.64% below the five-year average. Statistics are both encouraging and distressing, Knapp said. Increases in shots fired is as distressing as the reduction in homicides related to gun violence between the first half of 2018 and 2019 is encouraging. Hopefully, focusing on one illegal gun at a time and connecting with one person at a time will move both statistics in the right direction. Held of the Community Center thinks a push toward working together will make a difference. If we started empowering Indigenous leadership, I think what we have is a lot of outside help coming, and the kids don't want to listen, and it is taxing, and a lot of good-hearted people feel worn out and not appreciated, Held said. Things start and don't last. I think if we can get the youth to take ownership, definitely work toward more collaboration, we can make some differences. City to I Task Force on Cannabis. Group would explore impacts of state law by Maria Nagel. The City Council will consider Monday whether to create a task force to make recommendations about implementing a new state law legalizing recreational use of marijuana. Ward 6 Alderwoman Jen Carrillo proposed a task force with up to 3 council members and representatives from law enforcement, downtown businesses, criminal justice reform, and the cannabis industry. I think it's important to address some issues that are urgent and pressing, said Carrillo on Friday. Issues of taxing and zoning are most immediate, and whether we're going to even allow a cannabis dispensary in the city. But then there are a lot of other bigger questions that will come with this rollout. I am hoping that this just isn't a one and done, but an ongoing effort to help our community adjust to a new reality. The council will meet at 6 p.m. Monday at City Hall. As part of that, we've prepared a resolution creating a task force if, in fact, there is a council appetite to consider that and vote on it Monday night, said City Manager Tim Gleason on Friday. They may not. But separate to that, but very much related, this legislation that goes into law effective January 1, 2020, it's over 600 pages, said Gleason. It's a document that many municipalities around the state are scrambling to fully understand so that they can put before their respective boards or councils what those communities want to adopt, he added. Mayor Tari Renner supports the formation of a task force. If this is coming from the council, that's fine with me, said the mayor. Whether the council approves a task force, the same work is going to have to be done. It'll just be done by the council and staff rather than citizens appointed to this group. Meanwhile, Renner said he has received about 24 inquiries from people interested in opening a marijuana dispensary in Bloomington. Both Renner and Gleason said it is important for the city to work with the McLean County Board and Town of Normal on the issue. Some municipalities, including Morton, have opted out of allowing marijuana sales businesses. But Renner thinks tax revenue generated from marijuana sales could help the city fix its streets and pay for other neglected capital projects without having to raise fees or taxes. In other actions, the council will also consider the purchase of 3 automated garbage trucks for about $1 million. A vote in August was tabled to get more research on whether the city should switch to electric models. Hybrid electric powertrains for existing garbage trucks and fully electric garbage trucks are not in production at this time, a Public Works staff memo prepared for council stated. Payment of $128,690 to Bloomington firefighter John Meckley to resolve a workers' compensation claim. Meckley re-aggravated a previous injury while moving a patient. An arbitrator indicated that he would likely award Meckley a settlement of between $128,690 and $165,458, according to the memo. The city will host a public welcome reception for new Police Chief Dan Daneth at 5:30 p.m. Monday at City Hall. A formal swearing-in ceremony for Daneth will follow at a council meeting. Residents to Pay It Forward, community outreach planned in Gibson City. Residents of Gibson City are coming together September 14th and 15th to pay forward what they have received and are grateful for. Participants include Gibson Area High School, Interact, Gideon's, American Lutheran Church, First Christian Church, First Presbyterian Church, Gibson City United Methodist Church, Gibson City Bible Church, New Beginnings Church, Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, and the VFW. The Community Outreach Weekend, sponsored by the Poured Out Church Committee. You can help by delivering freshly baked cookies to the Methodist Church by noon Friday. They will be delivered to emergency workers throughout the community. On Saturday, help clean up yards, drive a golf cart, bag groceries at County Market, wash windows of vehicles stopping in for gas at either Casey's location or the FS station. On Sunday, pick up curbside bags of paper donations for both food pantries, wash vehicle windows at the gas stations, tie quilts at American Lutheran, sing hymns at the Annex, Heritage, and Villas of Hollybrook, be part of a traveling prayer team for the police station, hospitals, fire station, and schools, or stay at the park to pray with anyone in need of comfort. Make cards in the Hollybrook cafeteria for church use throughout the year, bag groceries at County Market, or drive a golf cart. A video project at Villas of Hollybrook on Sunday encourages residents to share a story or memory about the community or church life, either as individuals or as small groups or families. A picnic lunch on Sunday will be at the North Park Pavilion at the Boy Scout lot, and a golf cart will transport you both ways. Takeout meals will be available for the homebound. Next, there is a picture from the Festival of Chariots. A few raindrops and cloudy skies didn't dampen spirit Sunday at the 8th Annual Chariot Festival at Miller Park. The festival included a parade, classical dance, music, snacks, children's activities, mantra meditation, and yoga. The Festival of Chariots is an ancient Indian celebration in which presiding deities are taken from the temple in a procession in huge chariots pulled with ropes by people who dance and chant Vedic hymns. The tradition dates back more than 2,000 years. Prior to the parade, Srinivas Murari Das surveys while on the chariot. So that's the image above. It's very colorful, lots of flowers and balloons and pinks and yellows and greens and fuchsias. The next image is Praveen Das joins the crowd in chanting Vedic hymn Sunday at the 8th Annual Chariot Festival at Miller Park. Digital bookmobile set for normal stop. The digital bookmobile will be at the Normal Public Library from 1 to 6 p.m. Tuesday. The bookmobile has interactive workstations, touchscreen activities, devices to sample titles, and more. The 53-foot-long exhibit travels throughout North America and is free to attend. The exhibit is equipped with a wheelchair lift. Visitors to the exhibit can bring their device and library card to get help getting started. Library staff from both Bloomington and Normal Public Libraries will be on hand to help patrons with obtaining or renewing library cards. The first digital bookmobile launched in August 2008 in New York City. So far, the exhibit has traveled to 48 states and 3 Canadian provinces and hosted more than 900 events and 220,000 visitors. The free Libby app offers ebooks, audiobooks, and magazines. The free Sora app offers ebooks and audiobooks for K-12 schools, including badges and achievements. The exhibit is owned by Overdrive. Eureka Ice Cream Sandwich Stand Changes Ownership by Michelle Lehman. Siblings Lydia and Javen Hostetler might be the youngest entrepreneurs around. Their parents, Jennifer and Nathan Hostetler, purchased the Dugout Ice Cream and Sandwich Stand, 1980 South Main Street, Eureka, in late July. Since then, Lydia, age 9, and Javen, age 8, have been learning about work ethic, customer service, ice cream making, and money counting. We homeschool our children, so we thought that owning this as a family business would fit really well with our vision for our family, Jennifer Hostetler said. The couple's other children, ages 6, 4, and 1, complete the family who live 4 miles south of Goodfield in rural Danvers. Javen's Java debuted September 3rd as a coffee and breakfast drive-thru that's open 5:30 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday year-round. Javen's Java offers hot and cold brew coffees, hot and cold teas, baked oatmeal, energy bites, quiche, and muffins. The coffee is from Washington, Illinois roasters, Just Beans. Debit and credit cards as well as cash are accepted. Miles Danner of Eureka is manager of the morning operation. Hours for the dugout, which is seasonal, are 3:30 to 8:30 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Next April, it will reopen as Lydia's Dairy Barn. New items to the summer menu will include lemon shake-ups, ice cream sandwiches, and a few new ice cream twister flavors. Recently, Hostetler, who supervises evening operations, added key lime pie and pumpkin pie twister flavors. The tenderloin is the spot's most popular sandwich, she noted. Hot dogs, burgers, chicken, sandwiches, fries, nachos, and pretzels are also offered. Payment is cash during evening hours this fall, but debit and credit cards will be accepted starting in the spring. Subaru donation aids Wishbone. Illinois Prairie Community Foundation has received $3,381 from Bloomington Normal Auto Mall, part of Leader Automotive Group, from the 2018 Subaru Share the Love event. IPCF is donating the $3,381 to Wishbone Canine Rescue. Wishbone Canine Rescue helps more than 500 dogs find new homes each year, enriching the lives of the dogs, but also the families who adopt them, said IPCF Director Greg Meyer. Subaru, as a brand, is very supportive of animal rescue programs. Homes for Dogs Project set September 28th. The Homes for Dogs Project of Coldwell Banker Real Estate Group and animal shelters throughout the Midwest will be September 28th through 29th. Each Coldwell Banker office in Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan, and 1,700 agents are participating in 40 local adoption events. The local events will be 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. September 28th at Humane Society of Central Illinois, 423 North Kays Drive, Normal. Growmark Garden helps food bank. The growing garden just outside Growmark Incorporated headquarters has donated 60 pounds of fresh produce to Midwest Food Bank, with more expected in the coming weeks. The garden contains several varieties of tomatoes, kale, Swiss chard, turnips, radishes, peas, peppers, squash, onions, carrots, green beans, and kohlrabi. The garden is part of the Green Team Initiative, which focuses on environmentally friendly and sustainable initiatives. Ribbons remember victims of overdose. 30 silver ribbons have been placed in the planter in front of the Law and Justice Center in remembrance of 30 McLean County residents who died from drug overdose in 2018. International Overdose Awareness Day was August 31st. Cycling Tour to Benefit Kids. Cycling for Kids Incorporated will host a Stop the Cycle of Abuse bike ride September 20th through 22nd in McLean County. The non-competitive cycling tour and camping events consist of three 60-mile loops. Participants can ride 1, 2, or 3 days. Each cyclist is required to raise money, with proceeds benefiting Children's Home and Aid and McLean County Child Protection Network. Registration begins at 7 a.m. September 20th, and the tour begins at 8:30 a.m. The event begins and ends at David Davis Mansion, 1000 East Monroe Street, Bloomington. On September 21st, the tour will conclude with live music from 6 to 8 p.m. Register at cyclingforkids.net. Emmanuel event planned December 7th. Emmanuel Bible Foundation's Women's Christmas Celebration will be 8 to 11 a.m. December 7th at Doubletree by Hilton, Bloomington. The event includes a message from Carol Kent, music, food, and fellowship. Tickets are $25 and will be available from 8 a.m. to noon, October 7th at Emmanuel Bible Foundation at Broadview Mansion, 1301 South Fell Avenue, Normal. Online ticket orders will begin October 8th at www.ibfoundation.org or call 309-452-6710. Next is an article about Social Security from Elaine Popejoy, the Social Security District Manager in Bloomington. Social Security knows that a well-informed instructor is usually the best one suited to educate others. That's why we have online resources that are easy to access and share. Social Security Education Toolkit is a rich resource for teachers and advocates. Our Information for Educators page contains information and resources to engage students and to educate them on Social Security. It includes infographics and handouts for each lesson plan, links to Social Security web pages, talking points, quiz questions and answers. Here's a brief sample appropriate for high school students. Start the discussion by asking the students what they think they know about Social Security and if they think that Social Security is important to them as high school students. Capture keywords, phrases on the board and screen to keep for future discussion. The toolkit can be accessed at www.socialsecurity.gov/thirdparty/educators.html. It's important for students to understand why Social Security was created, and it's essential to their lives today and in the future. This knowledge and understanding will provide students a strong base on which to build their financial future. Young workers can also see how Social Security directly relates to them at the student's website at www.socialsecurity.gov/people/students. At Social Security, we appreciate informed people speaking about our programs and benefits in a thoughtful and informed way. We value and welcome the efforts all teachers make to educate America's young people. This preceding column was prepared by the Social Security Administration. For fast answers to specific Social Security questions, contact Social Security toll-free at 800-772-1213 or visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Different location, joint project, not on the books. Bloomington Library Board revisits plans for future growth by Maria Nagel. The head of the Bloomington Public Library Board doesn't want the city's reading and learning resource to be used as a potential savior for some spots in and near the downtown in need of development. Mayor Tari Renner has suggested a public-private partnership involving, in part, the library as a possibility for saving the former corporate headquarters of State Farm, a historic landmark in the heart of downtown. For now, at least, that option is off the table after State Farm announced Friday it may have found a buyer for the site. On July 18th, after a first potential sale fell through, the insurer announced it would demolish its 90-year-old, 13-story, 200,000-square-foot building at the corner of Washington and East Streets. During a public forum August 15th about how to redevelop 4 acres owned by the city and Illinois Wesleyan University near downtown, the library was mentioned as a possible occupant. Former Bloomington Alderwoman Diana Howman suggested building a joint Bloomington Normal Library on the empty lots created by the demolition of buildings once occupied by Mennonite Hospital and later Electrolux at 807 North Main Street. Neither of those suggestions appeal to the library's Board of Trustees. We remain committed to expanding on the current site, said Julian Westerhout, president of Library's Board of Trustees. Over the last number of years, we have evaluated any number of different options, and we still remain confident that this is the most prudent and sensible approach. The State Farm building, certainly a Bloomington icon, certainly very important for downtown and the entire community, is not a good fit for the library, he added. State Farm's downtown neighbor, Withers Public Library, at the corners of East and Washington Streets, was razed and a new library opened at 205 East Olive Street in 1977. The Withers site is now Withers Park. The current library building was designed for a city with a population of 41,000. While the population has increased 87%, the space has increased only by 25%, with a small addition and renovation in 2006. The city and IWU are trying to find a developer for the site occupied until 2011 by Electrolux, a Swedish appliance manufacturer. Electrolux bought the Eureka Company in 1974, moving to the Mennonite site in 2000, then moving its offices to North Carolina. But building a joint library there makes no sense for Bloomington, said Westerhout. It doesn't make a ton of sense from the perspective of the Bloomington Library to have a main location and a branch location 3/4 of a mile apart. It's another sort of interesting idea being thrown out to see if the library could be a potential savior for a spot that needs some sort of development, he said. But I don't think it would be sensible or a wise use of the library's funds or public funds to do that. The idea of merging the two libraries hasn't gained any traction, and to my knowledge, the last time that was suggested, the normal library wasn't really interested in it, said Westerhout. The Blooming Library Board also rejected the Downtown Task Force recommendation in October 2017 to replace the city's aging Market Street parking deck with a structure housing the library and a Connect Transit Bus transfer station site. In 2015, the library's consultant, the Farnsworth Group, evaluated the current facility's condition and determined its systems and structure could support a large addition. An estimated $28.5 million would be required to double the size of the library's current building from 57,700 square feet and add more parking and open green space to the site, Edward Berry Jr., a Farnsworth principal, said in July 2018. Farnsworth estimated it could cost $52 million to develop a more elaborate civic-style campus occupied by for-profit retail stores and offices and nonprofit organizations on city-owned land just south of the library's current location. Drawings of the campus concept were presented because the city council wanted to know what that could look like, said Westerhout. There was never a plan that the library would go beyond expanding the current building, he added. We never intended to have a giant campus that the library would control and develop. The library has just over $3 million in its capital reserve fund, which could be used as a down payment for the library's expansion or for $2 million in needed repairs to keep the library at its current facility, said BPL Executive Director Gene Hamilton. Some of the $1 million in the library's fixed asset fund could also be used to pay for interior items for an expanded building, she added. The library will need additional funding from the city to make the expansion possible. The city council has not made a funding commitment, so there is no timeline for the project. 4 new city council members were elected in April, so the library board has waited until they have had time to settle into their elected roles. We're revisiting and seeing what the general feeling and support from the council are right now, said Hamilton. The article is accompanied by a picture of Bloomington Public Library Director Gene Hamilton at the library, who says an expansion in the library's current location at 205 East Olive Street could include renovating bookshelves in certain areas. For a photo gallery of this, go to www.pantograph.com. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph, September 8th and 9th, 2019. Please stay tuned.